What up, folks? This is Cam, one half of the Cam and Cleve show. Mr. Cleavon, you there? Mr. Cleavon, you there? This is the voice of the fans. We want to talk to you again about the NFL. What else will we be talking about? This is NFL Week 2. So we're on location. I'm on location, Compton, California. We're going to talk about the NFL, and again, this is Week 2 of the Cam and Cleve show. Man, we're going to talk about Tom Brady and how they got massacred by the Kansas City Chiefs last week. Adrian Peterson, the rift that he apparently has with Sean Payton, and, well, not necessarily a rift, but is it a good fit? And did he get enough carries to justify them being on the team, the future Hall of Famer being on the team? That was a big question because I just don't think he got enough carries. So I don't think he got enough carries to justify him being on the team. You got to give the Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, multiple carries because that's kind of the way he runs the ball. Also, we had Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks travel to Green Bay, Lambeau Field, and where there historically is some home cooking. You with me, Cleavon?
Hey, Cam, you got me? You got me?
I got you. Just introducing myself, and wanted to talk about first things first. The Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs last Thursday. Was that a case of Captain Checkdown evolving, or were the Patriots a little over their skis with their Super Bowl celebration, hanging the banner, et cetera, et cetera? What do you think? What's your synopsis of that game, the first game of the season, last Thursday?
Well, my take on that is that the New England Patriots were definitely feeling themselves. They had definitely extended the Super Bowl celebration far too long and didn't realize the team's speed, especially at the skill positions that Kansas City has amassed with guys like Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt. Basically, they caught the Patriots completely off guard, a little hungover, and full of themselves, and they just took advantage of the opportunities that were presented for them. I mean, I certainly don't think this is something that we're going to see, carry over into the other weeks of the season. I don't believe that Alex Smith has that kind of ability and skill. But at the same time, if you give him an opportunity and those players get open, he'll take advantage of it, and he proved that.
Well, yeah, I won't say he doesn't have the skill because he proves he can. If he goes deep, he proves he can still complete the passes and be efficient as he's historically been. It's just my issue with Alex Smith is he doesn't go deep. He doesn't pull the cord on that too often. So it was nice to see him not only stay efficient and play within the game, but also take some chances. Kareem Hunt was wide open. So instead of he stepped up in the pocket, instead of kind of taking the sack, which some other quarterbacks might have done, Ryan Tannehill in Miami, he stepped back and let it fire. Tyreek Hill, I mean, most any quarterback would have completed that pass, but yet you still got to throw it. And he actually did that. So I give him credit for that. Again, he's historically being captain check down, and he wasn't checking down every play. So kudos to him, and I think you're right. Maybe the 28-3 and the raising of the five banners and all this and that, and they just were a little full of themselves. So we'll chalk it up at that and see how they come back and perform this week because they do have a pretty easy game. Is breaking my mind right now. I'm having a brain fart on who they play this week, but they play the Saints, so they should be able to put up some points against the Saints this week and kind of get back on the winning slide. Monday night we saw Dalvin Cook emerge. We saw some rookie running backs emerge this this week and this year, it's kind of been exciting to see some of these rookie running backs get on the field. Joe Mixon, although he didn't do a lot, where everybody's looking to see what how he performs. Christian McCaffrey, again, the Panthers are trying to ease him into the flow. But we had Leonard Fournette carrying the bulk of the carries, getting over 100 yards down there in Jacksonville, and Dalvin Cook breaking Adrian Peterson's record right there in front of him. I want to talk about that fit for New Orleans. I just don't think it's a good-looking fit for New Orleans. I kind of questioned initially why Adrian would go down there. After talking to him, he seemed kind of comfortable during the preseason there, and Mark Ingram welcomed him on the team with open arms. But to have three running backs and a quarterback like Drew Brees, I just don't see the fit. Now, talking to some of the New Orleans Saints media members, they were saying, well, Drew Brees going over 5,000 yards three seasons in a row hasn't netted them any wins. However, that's kind of the makeup of the team. And him being the best player on the team, well, arguably still the best player on the team, how are you going to take the ball out of his hands? Especially, it's not like they have new coaches, new regime there. They have the same coaches, the same format. I just don't see him really being effective taking the ball out of Drew Brees' hands. And that means you're trying to mix in three different running backs, Mark Ingram, the rookie Kamara, and a Hall of Fame-type running back in Adrian Peterson. I don't see the fit there. I'm thinking if I'm New York Giants, as piss poor as they looked on Sunday, they make a call, and I'd offer up a second and fourth rounder for AP tomorrow. What do you think about that?
Well, as much of an Adrian Peterson fan as I am just not a big proponent of trading in the middle of the season. Once you've already broke training camp, you've gotten down to your 53 players, they all understand your philosophies and your scheme, it's just too hard to, especially at that position, to integrate them into the system and expect them to be successful. Now, when Adrian Peterson came there, the reason that he came there is because the Saints didn't have a very good running game. They've been mediocre with the Mark Ingrams and the C.J. Spillmans of the world, and even since they lost the little scat back that went up to Philadelphia.
Darren Sproles.
They haven't been quite the same offense. Darren Sproles. But at the same time, like you were saying before, it is a pass-oriented offense. And so Adrian is probably not going to get as many touches as he would like. And in some instances, that's going to cause some frustration. Certainly when the first game of the season is your opportunity to go back to the team that let you go and show them exactly what it is you have left in the tank, and the head coach only calls six plays for you, and three of them are mediocre at best, you're not really getting a chance to see the real Adrian Peterson. Now, obviously, the Giants, in dire need of an upgrade to their running game, could use someone with the skill set of an Adrian Peterson, but if they wanted to do that, they should have done that previously. It's too late in the season to try and incorporate a running back into an offensive system that they haven't been accustomed to for their entire year.
You make a very good point. Weeks have gone by. There was an off season, the unofficial training camp back in April. Then they had the official training camp started a month ago in early August. And, we're not talking about the middle of the season. It's only been four or five weeks. Adrian Peterson signed with them right before the draft in April, so he's been in their fold since April. I think, number one, Adrian's a veteran. Number two, the running back is a position where I think you can plug and play, as evidenced by some of these rookies performing how they performed. They're new to their team. Now, obviously, they've been with their team for a number of months to learn the scheme, learn the program, learn what get some symmetry going, and I'll give you that. It might take a few weeks. However, the Giants are in such a position that they need that. I don't see Paul Paul Perkins carrying them, getting any better, carrying the team any further than Adrian Peterson would over the next couple of weeks. So I'd make that move. Or I'd go to Jeremy Hill in Cincinnati. I'd make that move. I'd take either one of those veterans because they need a punch. They need a force in the running game because we saw on Sunday with no receivers, no real threat at receivers, and no running game, Eli Manning's back there just you know, he had 3 seconds to get rid of the ball, and these receivers can't get open that fast, and he's taking some punishment. It's only going to get worse for him. So I'd be willing to make that move, though I do understand what you're saying. I'd be willing to still make that move. I do understand the point you're making about transitioning a new guy onto your team once things have been settled. I get that point. However, let's move on and talk about your Seattle Seahawks, and I'll give you a chance to, you know, I won't hold it against you. You made your Super Bowl prediction last week. I'll give you a chance to recant and revise your Super Bowl prediction as well because that didn't look like a Super Bowl contender to me in Green Bay.
Okay, so I won't recant my Super Bowl prediction. I will add a caveat to that Super Bowl prediction.
Oh, boy.
And that is
if
the offensive line has an opportunity to gain some cohesion and improve, because from what we saw week one, that is not a Super Bowl caliber offensive line. The defense is right there. The special teams are right there. The skill position players are right there. So obviously the biggest deficiency the Seattle Seahawks are facing right now is protecting Russell Wilson and opening up holes for the running backs that they have on their team right now.
Okay, well, so there's a couple issues what you said right now. The cohesion that the offensive line. Now, we just talked about continuity and camaraderie and teams being together for the life of the training camp. You guys had your offensive line guru on Tom Capel. He's been there for the last 3 years. You guys had you brought in a first-round draft pick in Joku. You have five different running backs that you're trying to play with. So you that is definitely a running back by committee. We should have seen something better than this, than what they put on the field on Sunday, going by your standpoint of cohesion.
I would agree. The offensive line was abysmal, and there's absolutely no way that Russell Wilson will be able to survive an entire season with those guys in front of him. If they don't get better, this is a 10-6 team that will get to the playoffs and not do very much. If they get better and they're able to establish the run game, check down, find Jimmy Graham, or get, you know, pass interference calls when pass interference happens so that, you know, they can get the ball on the 1 yard line and score, those kind of things, then they can do some things. As the schedule looks, the next couple of games, not that difficult. I would anticipate a 3-1 start to the season, and we'll go from there. San Francisco, a tough game at Tennessee, and then Indianapolis. My prediction is that they win the next three straight, and then the 3-1, and we'll have a different conversation about it. The offensive line still is a work in progress.
Fortunately,
hopefully they get that fixed. And if they don't, then this is not the Super Bowl team that I had predicted.
Well, fortunately, they have a couple practice games here in the next few weeks, as you mentioned, with the Niners and the Indianapolis Colts coming up. So they have a chance to kind of get better. That game with Tennessee is going to be a tough game, and we'll see how they wake up, if they're able to wake up against the Niners here next week. Now, before we go on and review our picks from last week, I want to talk about the unfairness. You know, we had Hurricane Harvey last week, and before that we had Hurricane Harvey a couple weeks ago destroy Houston and the Gulf Texas Southern Texas border, and shout out to all those people and families that were impacted by that, and the spirit of Houston come together. And you know, we'd be remiss if we go without saying that your boy J.J. Watt did a fantastic job by donating initially his $100,000 and turning that into a huge cause and raising now over $30 million to date. The fantastic effort by him. But we had Miami in the Florida endured Hurricane Irma coming through there last week, and it caused the Dolphins game to be rescheduled to week 9, which is going to cause the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dolphins to play 16 straight games. Now, before they implemented the bye, they were talking about player safety and how important it was to keep their players safe, and they have the new BS tackling rules that it seems like every single game or every quarter of a game, I'm seeing a penalty on some BS stuff that is just remarkably BS. It's not football as I grew up watching, and even the last 5 years the game has changed so much, and it's all with they all preface it by saying it's all for player safety. But yet they have these two teams that are going to play 16 games straight. I think it's an unfair advantage they're giving the rest of the league, especially the AFC East and the AFC South, because these two teams are playing 16 straight games without a bye. Every other team's going to have a bye. They don't have a bye. They don't have a bye because they're in their season. Most teams have to bye 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks. Once they have played some games, these guys have a bye at the beginning of the season, like an extra week of training camp, but there's no training camp because they were supposed to play. They were preparing to play last week. So I think the NFL did both of these teams a disservice by not playing that game, moving it to a different venue, and playing that game on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday of last week. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, you're sounding like Justin Timberlake and you're crying me a river.
It's really
showing your true Dolphin orange and teal, you know, coming out of you, because these are football players, bro. And a 16-game season is not something unique and unusual. They've been doing it for decades. It's only recently that they've decided, okay, well, at some point we'll try and give some of these teams a break in the middle of the season to try and, you know, heal up. But you have to understand there was, you
know,
a hurricane that hit Florida. It's a natural disaster. It's not about player safety. It's about there was a natural disaster. The schedule is already made. It's far too difficult to adjust and change those things. So, unfortunately, because of the natural disaster, you're going to have to play a 16-game season. You're going to play 16 games in a row. I'm so sorry about that.
You should get to the playoffs
and then get a bye week, and then there's your bye week. So once you go in the bye week, I think if it was the Carolina Panthers or the Buffalo Bills or the Los Angeles Chargers, you wouldn't have any problem with it. You would say, oh, man, too bad, so sad. You know, things happen. I mean, you know, is there global warming or is there not global warming? We're not sure. You know what I'm saying? And you would just chalk it up to that. But because it is the fringe, all of a sudden, it's player safety, like the helmets don't fit, like the shoulder pads are too small. No, it has nothing to do with any of that. They just got to play 16 games in a row.
32 teams.
And I'm sorry. And they're football players.
The
I'm sorry. That's good. They're football players.
There's 32 teams in the league. 30 of them will have
The Dolphins play 8 games in Florida. There's no weather considerations. Ask those guys up in Buffalo and Minnesota about that. Is that an unfair advantage?
They can't wait to get to Florida.
I mean, is that an unfair advantage?
They get to Florida to play.
They get to play in the 305 game here.
Oh,
right.
Mike, listen to you. Oh,
player safety.
Goodness. Like I said,
they can't
wait to get to Florida. Any team cannot wait to get to Florida to play. They cannot wait.
You're talking about unfair advantages and player safety. This has nothing to do with player safety. This has everything to do with the players coming out way in advance, and a natural disaster taking shape that changed the landscape of when they can and can't play.
My point, you're missing my whole point. My point is they could have moved that game to Friday, Saturday, or Sunday and still got that game in. The Atlanta Falcons, they could have played in that stadium. The Jacksonville Jaguars, that stadium was available. They could have moved that game.
But you know it's not that easy to do because of all of the other things that have to go along with moving that. It's based on the television revenue. It's based on people moving around. It's based on what's going on in the stadiums. You don't know all the parameters of what's going on. They reviewed it, and they felt that the best way to go was to simply give them the bye week in the first week and keep it pushing. Football players, right?
Oh, well, yeah. A little easier said than done there, big fella.
Toughen up a little bit, okay? Toughen up a little bit.
Listen to it. All right, so to review week one, you know, we had the Green Bay Packers obviously beat the Seahawks. That was one game. We both had the New England Patriots over the Chiefs. The Chiefs surprised us both. We both had Cincinnati over the Bengals, who ended up getting shut out, surprisingly. And then we both had Houston over the Jacksonville Jaguars, who appears they're going to be a tough out this season. And I also like to shout out to the Cleveland Browns. For 3.5 quarters, they really hung well with the Pittsburgh Steelers. DeShone Kizer, a rookie coming out of nowhere to start the game, really fared pretty well in that game. Though they lost the game, I think that was kind of a moral victory in a sense for the Cleveland Browns because they hung in well with the Ravens, but they lost the game. And then also, well, the LA Chargers. I don't know, for whatever reason, I picked the Chargers to beat the Broncos. I was just thinking they were going to put up a few more points, and they kept it close, but they didn't win. So to end the week. I had 11 of the 15 games correct. You had 9 of the 15 games correct. And then also, I had 2 of the 3 games. I had picked the Dolphins was one of my points against the spread. I had 2. I got 2 right, but the Dolphins didn't play. And then you had 1 right. I think it was the Arizona game. You had KC plus 5. That's the one game right that you
had. I had the KC plus the 9, and unfortunately there was natural disaster and you couldn't get your other pick in, so we would never know what happened there. But, I hear what you're saying about the Cleveland Browns. I liked the way their defense played against Pittsburgh. They held up very admirably. They let Antonio Brown get his 182 yards, but, yes, Antonio Brown, there's nothing you can do about that. At the same time, like you're saying, I think that defense is a lot better than people think. And once Myles Garrett gets back, they might even be better than that. So, they were kind of one of the surprise teams of the first week. And as far as expecting that from Jacksonville, yeah, probably not so much. Leonard Fournette, he might be the truth. I don't think Bortles is going to continue to put up those kind of numbers. And the 10 sacks, the 4 by Calais Campbell, complete total operation, won't happen again.
Well, Jacksonville has some good defensive players with the cornerbacks, Ramsey and Boyer, I believe his name is. They have some decent cornerbacks, so it's chances they can still. Calais Campbell's not going to get 4 sacks a game, but he can still get some more sacks because they're going to be able to hold the receivers down a little bit. Our confidence pick for the week. I had 10-6. We both had the Patriots at 5. You had Houston at 4. I had Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Oakland, and Green Bay. So I had there's my 10 points. You had, like I said, you had Houston. You gave Houston 4 points, so you lost there. That was your 6 points there. So what did you learn from last week? Last week I learned that the rookies have really hit the ground running. As I mentioned, Dalvin Cook, the quarterback DeShone Kizer, and Deshaun Watson, once he was able to get in the game after halftime, he drove the team right down and scored. Now, he proved his rookie being rough around the edges because he came back and gave an interception, had some questionable plays. But I had the rookies hitting the ground running, looking pretty good. What did you see from week one?
But what I saw from week one primarily is that Cincinnati is in a world of hurt. I don't know how you get shut out with that much offensive talent on your team. Secondly, I learned that the Indianapolis Colts have put far too much of their investment in their future with Andrew Luck and have no insurance policy. Certainly, Tolzien and Jacoby Brissett are not going to get it done at the NFL level. And Frank Gore in his 47th year running the ball, this is not going to be an answer for anybody for very long. And I also saw that there were some teams that, you know, if you take it a little bit too lightly, they'll come up and, bite you, show you who they are, i.e. the Los Angeles Rams, just really taking it to those guys. But, again, it's also
the Colts.
Because I also played, I said how poorly the Colts played. So there's that.
Yeah, yeah, they played the Colts.
I also learned that Christian McCaffrey is not necessarily who he thought he was. I know you mentioned in the beginning of the show that they're bringing him along slowly, but hey, man, this is the NFL. I mean, how slowly can you bring along players that are supposed to be as impactful as some people think Christian McCaffrey can be? You know, we need a little bit more of a, you know, a little bit more of a frenetic pace to kind of get him ready. Also saw that with, Dallas, with Ezekiel getting, getting fed, they might, they might be formidable come playoff time. And also that maybe.
Well, yeah, we didn't talk.
Yeah, and that maybe.
No, we didn't talk much
about
the. We didn't talk much about the Cowboys. Yeah, we didn't talk much about the Cowboys, but I think it's unfair that Ezekiel is playing. If he was suspended, I don't know how you're suspended, but yet you still get to play. But yeah, you're right. If he's on the team, they're able to give him the ball 21 times. He's going to get 100 yards, 100 plus. That kind of changes the whole dynamic of their team. It takes a lot of the pressure off Dak and Dez, who's, though he's kind of quieted down, he's still a big time receiver. One question before we move on to week two projections. Is there a market for Teddy Bridgewater? Now, I know you wasn't a huge fan of Teddy Bridgewater, but it looks like Bradford's kind of making a home in Minnesota, and they like him, he likes them, and he's looking good. What's going on with Teddy Bridgewater? Do you want Teddy as a backup? Should the Colts be looking at Teddy Bridgewater? What do you think? Or should Jacksonville be looking at Teddy Bridgewater, get him back down there in Florida? What do you think?
Well, I don't think anyone should be looking at Teddy Bridgewater until they're, 100% sure what his, health is like. I know he's on the PUP list right now, and they've been moving him along, at a very, conservative pace. Like you said before, I was not the biggest Teddy Bridgewater fan. I thought that he could definitely be a game manager in this league at some point once he kind of got his legs underneath him. Sam Bradford is kind of taking the reins, like you said, up there. Stephon Diggs is a big target for him. Rudolph is a big target for him. Give him 3 seconds, he might make something happen. They are probably at the point where it's not much of a competition, and they're probably settled with Bradford, but I don't know what the market really is for someone like Bridgewater. I think you have to be a little bit hesitant given his, his track record with his health. So I wouldn't say that any of those other aforementioned teams that you said would be someone that would be interested in a Teddy Bridgewater per se as their future franchise quarterback.
Well, let's recall, Teddy Bridgewater kind of had a freak accident. It was a non-injury accident during practice of the preseason, the last week of the preseason last season. So, and I don't think he's been historically injury-prone. I just think that was a kind of a freak accident. So, I give him some consideration in that respect as well. This week, going into week two, I think we have a pretty good game tomorrow night with the Texans and the Jaguars. We'll see if the Texans play better, obviously, or if the Jaguars are for real. I think it'll be a good test for both those teams. And obviously looking to see if the Bengals can get back on track this week. And then I want to see if also I'll be watching to see if Alex Smith and Bradford can duplicate their performance last week, or was that a one-hit wonder, their week one performance. What about you? What are you looking for in week two?
I am looking to see if the Seahawks can bounce back and show that their offensive line can be somewhat formidable and establish the run game. They looked extremely poor in their loss to Green Bay. Really, there were only a handful of plays that really changed the course of that game. So that's something I'm looking forward to seeing, because going forward, if they're not able to do that, not quite the team that we thought that they were. I am also looking at that New Orleans. You kind of skated around that New Orleans, New England game earlier. New Orleans, they only put up 19 points last week against the Vikings, and the Patriots defense did not look that stellar. And typically, Drew Brees is capable of more than that. So I'm interested to see if the Saints can bounce back against them, as well as whether or not Aaron Rodgers can continue his impressive play against the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, that's the Falcons, and that's a better game of what you're talking about, the Saints and the Patriots. I don't think there's going to be a game at all. I fully expect the Patriots to rebound and put up a 40-burger on the Saints coming this week. I don't see Brees challenging the Patriots much at all. But I think the Packers against the Falcons, that's going to be a great Sunday night game. So I expect that one to be a pretty good game there. My battery's running dead, so hopefully you got your script up and you can talk about the rest of the games. But I obviously want to see what the Dolphins do against the Chargers. The Chargers historically fail in the waning games. I want to see if the Dolphins, are they going to come fired up, or are they going to come laid back? It'll be their first game while the Chargers have their second game under their books, and they lost a close one. So they're going to be more apt to win. Let's see how that game turns out. But I think Thursday night game, the Texans and the Jaguars, I want to see the Texans and the Bengals, see how they respond. And then the Titans and the Jaguar, I think is going to be a undercover. That's going to be a pretty good game here this week. That's what I'm looking to see. And then obviously I'll be watching the Minnesota Vikings and Alex Smith and the Chiefs to see what they're able to do, if they're able to duplicate their efforts. Now the Vikings play the Steelers, so that's going to be a tougher matchup for Sam Bradford. But I want to see if the Chiefs against the Eagles, I have KC winning that game, and they're -4.5. So I want to see if they're able to hold on, because Carson Wentz is a gunslinger. We didn't talk about him either, but we know he's a gunslinger with the Brett Favre mentality. But is he going to be able to make enough plays to continue the game there? That's what we see. So running down the list, you have the Chargers. You have the Chargers over the Dolphins. You have the Texans over the Bengals. Just talk about the game we disagree on. But I think those are the only two games actually we disagree on. Is I have Cincinnati over the Texans, and I have the Dolphins over the Chargers. The rest of the games, I think it looks like we agree on there. Now, our confidence picks are a little different. I'm pretty confident that the Patriots are going to beat the Saints. I have Arizona. Not that I'm really that high on the Cardinals, but I think they're playing the Colts, which should be an easy game, because you mentioned the quarterback that they have in line is not going to be able to win many games for them. I give the Seahawks a confidence level of a 3 out of 5, and then I have Oakland and Baltimore. But you're pretty confident that Seahawks is going to win their practice game against the San Francisco 49ers, which they should. But the Raiders playing the biplane, they should win that game pretty handily. And then you do have some confidence with the Arizona Cardinals in their upcoming game. But you're Carolina, you want to talk about your Panthers pick there and over the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the Carolina Panthers, definitely have some holes that they need to plug and, fill before they have a chance to make another Super Bowl run. But the Buffalo Bills, although they looked, fairly impressive against the Jets in their first game, establishing the run with Shady, Tyrod is going to make some plays, and their defense is a lot better than most people think. So
you know, they, although they, you know, had an impressive victory game, game one, you know, week one, I still think that the Carolina Panthers will definitely have the advantage in that one. Not supremely confident, but mildly confident that they'll be able to pull that off. And hopefully Christian McCaffrey can show us a little bit more than he showed us in week one.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't talk much about this, but Matthew Stafford, now the highest paid player in the NFL, how do you see his season progressing? Do you think he deserves a big payday? And will he be able to get them into the playoffs and get a playoff victory? He got them in the playoffs the last two seasons, but without a victory, do you see them winning the game in the playoffs this season?
I don't see him winning a game in the playoffs. I don't think that he's necessarily overpaid. I think that the timing of when his contract expired and what it is that the Detroit Lions needed, I think it was a good fit for them. I think it's very similar to the contracts that Flacco signed when he was up for free agency, Matt Ryan signed when he was up for free agency. You know, it's any given season that, rather, Matt Stafford can throw for, you know, in excess of 5,000 yards. He's thrown for 5,000 yards before, you know, typically no less than four. He gives you a chance to win. You look around the league and some of these guys are starting guys like, you know, Tom Savage, you know, Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer. You know, you can go to sleep good at night knowing that Matt Stafford's your quarterback. You need other things on your team. You need a running game. You need a better defensive line. So you can't put it all on him, but he definitely gives you a chance to win, and I think that he's in a good place.
Okay, I'd agree. The Broncos welcoming the Cowboys for week two, the Cowboys are favored by 1 point. I think something's off, but I mean, they're giving the Cowboys a lot of credit there, or maybe they're looking at Trevor Siemian is saying Trevor played over his head for three quarters as he did on Monday night. What do you think about that game? How do you think that game is going to shake out?
Well, I think the Broncos were extremely fortunate that their head coach called a very timely timeout to ice the kicker for the Chargers. Otherwise, that game could have went in overtime, and we don't know what could have happened. Their defense played well for three quarters and then completely collapsed. The running game, they did try to infuse a little bit of Jamal Charles in with C.J. Anderson, so a little bit of a, you know, dynamic there going on. Not quite sure what to make of the whole Jamal Charles experiment. Hopefully we'll see a little bit more as the season wears on. I thought they should have thrown the ball to Emmanuel Sanders a few more times. He had a few opportunities to make some touchdowns, didn't make it happen. But I don't think right now, from what we saw on Monday night, that the Denver Broncos are necessarily scaring anybody. Their defense is still very formidable, but the Dallas Cowboys offense with Ezekiel Elliott, if they can find or at least target Dez Bryant, looks like Jason Witten is still Dak Prescott's favorite receiver, and there's only so much he can do with that dynamic. He doesn't really throw to any other receivers, so... That being said, I still think that the Cowboys should win that game pretty handily.
Pretty handily. Well, they've only been given 1 point, and the Raiders over the Biplanes is 15 points, the second biggest or the biggest spread of the week. How did Beast Mode look to you in the Raiders jersey?
They looked like they were bringing him along a little slowly. He had his moments where he looked like the old Beast Mode, but he had a lot of times where it looks like he was having trouble kind of getting his footing and finding out exactly where the holes were. I mean, you know, we don't want to have that Eddie George syndrome where you just run straight ahead no matter, you know, what it's looking like, you know, no matter what's there. You really want to see your running back be a little bit more nimble and able to avoid contact. But, again, I think that they're bringing him along slowly, not trying to overwork him too, you know, too early in the season. So I thought that he did, you know, admirably. You know, maybe a few more touches in the red zone, but he can still get you those tough yards.
Okay. I agree. He had 18 carries. I think they're working him into the rhythm where they're going to try to give him the ball a few more times, kind of take the pressure off David Carr, and so he doesn't have to do so much in the game there. Now, Yakima's own Cooper Kupp, the steal of the fantasy draft. If you don't have him, get him. The Rams play the Redskins. They work on the Redskins, or they work on the Washington football team coming to the Coliseum this year, or this week. Is Cooper Kupp on your radar? What do you think of Jared Goff and the Rams offense? Have you seen any? Have you got any indication of what the Rams offense is capable of?
I was impressed with what Jared Goff was able to do under Sean McVay. I'm still not quite sure what to make of Todd Gurley. Was that just an eight-game stretch where he did really well, and then he hasn't done anything really ever since? He had a very poor 2016, and then a lot of carries for 40 yards and a few touchdowns. But is the running game still something viable that they can hang their hat on?
He had 20 carries for less than 50 yards. That was very concerning. As with Melvin Gordon's performance, that was his performance is just as concerning. Anthony Lynn's quote that he said, the best backs in the league, they win the one-on-one matchups. And so far, Melvin Gordon isn't winning the one-on-one matchups. So I don't know if that was calling out Melvin Gordon or just lighting a fire under him, because that sounded like a pretty big slap in the face there. What do you see from Melvin Gordon? And to go back to on your Todd Gurley point, I think it was a matter of the league not being familiar with what he was capable of, because if you remember, he didn't play the first 2 weeks then of his rookie season. And then when he played, he came on strong, and that's because the league wasn't familiar with him. But once they said, okay, let's load up the box, he hasn't been able to produce since they loaded up the box on him. And that's when the last season was load up the box, because they had nobody else, no quarterback, no receivers to think of. Now they have receivers. Cooper Kupp, I mentioned, Sam Watkins, they traded for him from the Buffalo Bills to give Goff all the – to remove any excuses from Goff's performance. They loaded up on the offensive side of the ball. But we'll see if he can actually produce. But what do you think about that mild slap in the face from Lynn to Gordon?
You know, I didn't really see Melvin Gordon having that bad of a game. I thought that he did, fairly well with the touches that he had. I thought that he was going up against a very good defense. So, there's not a whole lot that you can say on that regard. I would have a far greater concern for what Todd Gurley hasn't been able to do as opposed to the game that Melvin Gordon had. Melvin Gordon's going to get his touches. He's going to make his hay in this league, this season. And I'm not convinced that Todd Gurley is who we thought he was. I'm not convinced it's the Gurley man that came out of Georgia that was just running people over. Hopefully, he'll be a little bit more balanced. Like you said, Cooper Kupp, he runs great routes out of Eastern Washington, makes a lot of people, kind of have flashbacks to, Ricky Prohl, Dane Licker type receivers. He's
exactly
kind of in that same vein.
Exactly, yeah.
So he definitely gets open in the middle of the field, and he's able to, he takes people by surprise. And just like you're saying with Todd Gurley, that the league kind of caught up with him after they were able to kind of see a little bit more film. I think that may happen with Cooper Kupp. On the flip side, he may end up much more like a Julian Edelman, Wes Welker type, where he's just a really good slot receiver, and, he's deceptive in his speed and his size, and you kind of lose track of him, and next thing you know, it's a 20-yard gain. So from the fantasy perspective,
exactly.
It's definitely someone to take a look at.
Definitely, you got to take a look at him. Cooper Kupp, he gets open. I've seen it in practice. I've seen it against some of the best quarterbacks that Chargers had to offer up close and personal. Cooper Kupp gets open. He's going to become a security blanket for Jared Goff. And That's our show. Thanks, Cleveland, for the hanging in there for the extended show. We'll see you next week, and enjoy your football this weekend.
Right on, bro. You do the same. Go Dolphins.
Go Dolphins. Have a good one, Chief.
All right, take it easy, bro.
Later.